is Butch G, and he's come here from Hawthorne, California. And welcome him.
Thank you, welcome, Butch.
Hi, I'm Butch, an alcoholic.
Hi, Butch.
And you know that because I screwed things up already, right? It's evident. It's really good to be here. I always try and remember when I'm at an AA meeting, and I say, my name is Butch, I'm an alcoholic. How lucky I am to be able to say that out loud. A lot of people die trying to discover that fact about themselves. You know, we're lucky people that get to come in here and understand about what's going on with us and get a chance at recovery. And I try and remember that all the time because I think it's really important to be grateful about your sobriety. No matter what's going on in your life, if you've got your sobriety, you're way ahead of the game. Just my opinion, but that's what I've seen and learned here. Well, it's good to be here. Guess I got to talk about it, huh? I didn't even know I had the disease of alcoholism, and you know, and it was killing me. I just thought I was crazy, and the longer I drank, the more it let that insanity out, which is actually, you know, really close to the truth. But I could never get past that thought that I was nuts. You know what I mean? I couldn't get around it or through it. It was like I couldn't go any further than that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and discovered there's a way to live. You know, and they showed me about the 12 steps. And did everyone else hear that? Yes. Okay. Show me about the 12 steps and what to do, you know, how to go. A different way to live my life, and thank God for that, because I really, really needed it. My wife will get up here in a little while and talk about her version of my drinking, which is, you know, it's filtered, what can I say? Filtered with the truth, unfortunately, but it's a lot more fun now than it was before, I'll tell you that. Yeah, that's a big difference. I'm one of 9 children. I have 6 sisters and 2 brothers. Born in Los Angeles, California. Been there most all my life in California. Growing up was, you know, okay. You could, I discovered with so many people in the family, you can kind of hide out really easy, and I really like to hide out. You know, you can do that really, just go off on yourself, and it was really easy to do that, and that was kind of like where I just landed in that group. I'm the only alcoholic in the family. Out of 9. The other ones are just all crazy, like the rest of us, but I guess the drink didn't work for them. Growing up, my dad had us all going to Catholic school, and, you know, when we got time to do that, and before that, I learned here that we're abnormally fearful, you know, and once I got sober and started looking back at my life and how I felt, even before I drank, I understood where I fit in that. I remember I went to first day of kindergarten. I went there and you know, it was time for a nap, so everyone, you know, stood up to go take their nap, and I took off all my clothes with my underwear, and I was the only one in the room that did it, you know. And they thought that was just hilarious, you know. But being a oversensitive alcoholic, I just like never went back to school. I refused to go. Never went back to kindergarten again. Here I am, you know, just a few. I'm not that old, and I'm already, you know, moving, already running. I grew up. I went to work with my dad for a while. He was a plastering contractor. I had to do that because there were so many kids around the house. You know, when it was time to move, you had to get into your slot. You know, so my mom could raise another one, and so I go to work with my dad, and he's a plastic contractor, and that's where I first saw guys drinking, because they always had a half pint in the back pocket, and snuff and that stuff, and I didn't think too much about it then. It's just they all, you know, smelled unusual, like wet plaster and whiskey, and I used to always go to bars with my dad, too. You know, he'd stop, and I'd get to sit in the bar, or I'll sit in the truck, and, you know, for hours wait for him, and that was much fun, but it was different, but yeah, just the way it went, and then got through that, and it was time to go to grade school. We lived across the street from St. John's Academy in Los Angeles there, over at 60th and Crenshaw. And I'd see my sisters going across the street to school. All of them went over there to grade school, and I didn't think anything of it, and seemed like, you know, just a regular old thing to me. Went over there across first day of first grade, and I was just standing there, and the bell rang, and as soon as the bell rang, my stomach did like a three-quarter knot, and I just took off running and ran back home. And I didn't understand what that was about, you know. I didn't understand why I'm the only one leaving and what's going on with me. You know, I didn't see anyone else moving off the playground when the bell went off, and I didn't know why I was. And looking back, you know, I think I just needed a drink is what it was already back then emotionally. You know what I mean? A little whiskey, and I probably could have hung out. But I didn't know anything about it back then. So anyway, I didn't get away with not going to grade school. I went back and, you know, did all that stuff and got introduced to the Nuns of Love, as I like to call them, over there at the Catholic school. Well-intentioned bunch of maniacs. It's a lot of fun. They were good people. You know, they really were, looking back at it now, but it's a little scary when you're younger. And that was good, you know, but what I did was I started learning about God from them. And they talk about a God, you know, what God wanted you to do, as I heard it, so he would love you, and, you know, you'd be okay, and you wouldn't have to go to hell and burn for the rest of your life. And I thought, well, okay, I'll give this a shot. And when I did all the stuff they talked about, I felt really good about myself. But, you know, as you get older, you start messing around more. And so I was, you know, going to hell on a daily basis, which is kind of traumatic if you're naive enough like I was to believe it was going to happen any second, you know. So I went through Catholic school like that for quite a while, and it was a little distracting. That's what I mean about the fear thing, you know. I didn't know I had that going on. Not everyone else. A lot of people went to school, had a perfectly wonderful time, got a good education, enjoyed themselves, but that's just what was running around with me. Got through a grade school. We moved over towards the beach, Manhattan Beach. We were over there for a while. The group of us, my dad was a builder, so we had two houses we lived in. You know, it was bizarre. All of us walking back and forth and all this stuff. And then he finally built a house big enough for all of us, and that was kind of nice. I don't know where this all this is coming from, but I guess I'm supposed to say it tonight. Anyway, so we were down at the beach and started going to high school, and then I started drinking a little bit. I started surfing down at the beach all the time, and friends of mine, we used to hang out at the beach during the summers, all summer long, a lot of fun, and their brothers were like, you know, 4 or 5, 6 years older than our group of people, and I was about 15, and we would walk down Hermosa Beach, just a mile or two, and go to one of the guys' houses, you know, because they're old enough to rent a house, and he'd buy us beer. So that's where I first had my first beers on purpose. We used to get a quart of Country Club malt liquor and then try and walk back, you know, drink it and walk back to our house in Manhattan Beach without getting arrested or throwing up. And if you made that, then you had a successful evening. You know, and the first time I had a drink, it didn't, like, set me free or, you know, flames or any of that stuff. But after a while, I caught on, obviously. yeah. After a while, it started to be a little bit more important. I got through high school and started going to work and doing that type deal, and started throwing drugs on top of my alcohol because that's just what we ran into. It was like no question. I never questioned drinking anything or taking anything. It was just, you know, well, whatever. You know, if I feel different, fine. You know, fine with me. Started doing that a little more, and you know, alcohol doesn't, the longer you do one thing, the longer you do it, at least for me, the more you want to do it. I didn't want to, like, it got to the point after a few years, I didn't want to do anything besides get loaded. I mean, why would you want to do anything else? If the only time you feel comfortable is when you're drunk, why would you not want to be comfortable? You know, that's kind of like how my thinking progressed towards this disease, and that was why I was still working, of course. Like I say, I started throwing the drugs in there, and then just drinking more because of that. Met my first wife in there. I had a motorcycle at the time, and she and her friend were hitchhiking, and I immediately fell in love with her, you know, because I'm such a deep guy. And guess what? She got pregnant, and so we had a little shotgun wedding thing, you know. Her dad said, oh, you can, you know, go in the Army, or you can marry my daughter. And I thought, well, gee, I can go in the Army and get shot at in Vietnam, or I can stay here and have sex with this beautiful lady. Oh, okay. I guess we'll get married, you know? And that's my wonderful motive for getting married, you know, it's all the right ideas, right? Jesus. when it didn't work, I was just so surprised, you know. It didn't work out. But we had a really nice daughter from that marriage, and she's given us a couple of grandchildren. And that's wonderful. And she's doing real well. It lasted about a year and 7 months, and then we broke up. And when we split apart, I was just devastated, you know. What I started doing was using that as an excuse to drink. All my family's broken up, you know. God forbid you look at why it broke up. No. Just, you know, the family's broken up, you know. And I used that to drink at for a long time. A lot of anger behind that and a lot of drinking behind that. And not even really knowing that was my motivation, but that's because it was just the way I felt, and that's it. Went on from there. My dad was a general building contractor, so I used to work with him a lot, and I could get away with a lot. It was myself and my two brothers and my dad, and I could get away with a lot because they just kind of let me go as I wanted, and so I could drink a lot, and I ended up doing that. And let me see. Trying to roll the head around here and remember what I'm doing. It's really interesting looking back at your life, you know, because it's kind of nerve-wracking when you really think about how you used to live. At least it is for me, man, I'll tell you. Whew. I'm glad I'm in here. I don't want any more of that. Every so often, you know, I get tired of drinking, and everything was like we'd like turn to crap one more time. And this one time, my sister was living up in Alaska, her and her husband, up in Ketchikan, Alaska. And she said, you can come up here and go to logging camp, and you know, they put you on an island, and they give you a lot of money, and there's really no place to spend it, so maybe you can get some money. I thought, well, maybe I can go up there and get ahead or something. You know, it'd be a change. So I, you know, flushed all my Benzedrine down the toilet and, you know, went off to Alaska. And, you know, turn over a new leaf here. And what happened was that her father-in-law was a bartender up there. And so I started, you know, hanging out in the bar and getting every other drink free. And it was a lot of fun up there in Alaska. Never to get to logging camp. Never made it. I ended up working in the pulp mill for a while up there, and that was kind of interesting. They had you on a rotating shift, and you'd work, you know, a week of days, a week of swing, a week of graveyard, and then start over again, you know. So everyone was really pretty dingy up there because you never got a chance to really sleep right. But I fit right in, shoot, you know. And got through with that for a while. I came back down here to Los Angeles and was hanging out. And friend of mine, you know, and started getting the same thing again about, I'm doing this one more time. You know, I think I should try and knock it off, do something a little different. You know, I guess, you know, it's time to like take what we call in here a geographic. You know, I didn't know I was doing that, but I thought I was trying to make, improving my life. You know what I mean? Another great improvement idea. So this friend of mine lived in Point Loma, which is down by San Diego. So I moved down there, and we used to hang drywall together. So we were lived in Point Loma and hanging drywall up La Quinta, that little resort place they're making up there, and you know, doing the deal, doing the same thing, and hanging out. And he used to go down to Tijuana every weekend. You know, he'd been down there for a while, so I started going down with him, and we're hanging out with the wonderful girls in the bars there. You know, top quality stuff going on there, and. And then we got the brilliant idea, well, why don't we just move down here? So we moved down to Tijuana, him and I. Had a little place by the bull ring by the sea there, you know. It was wonderful. I'm already incoherent around people speaking English, you know what I mean? And then I moved down to a country where they speak Spanish, and I don't speak Spanish other than, you know, the tequila, cerveza, you know, uno mas stuff. All the real important communication words. Anyway, stayed there for a while, and then... came back up here. Friends of mine started dying right in there from this disease, and in our 20s. A friend of mine, Bob, he was great. I really miss him. He'd made a wonderful AA guy. Just would have been a great AA guy. He used to have a 53 Buick that he hand painted red on the bottom and black on the top. You know, hand painted, and then he took his driver's side window and he painted it so it was blacked out, and he had a little slit like this so he could look out of it, because he used to get a little nervous when people watch him at a stoplight, you know. So that was just his deal, man. Sure did love him. He was a character. He was a character. Great big guy. We used to call him the walrus. But anyway, he He had a wife and a child, and they got divorced, and he was going through all that crap and driving himself crazy. And what he did was he went, tried to commit suicide one night and unhooked the oven and, you know, let the gas run. And in the morning, he forgot that he had the gas on, and he got up and lit a cigarette and blew the apartment building apart. And it didn't kill him right away either. You know, he walked out of the apartment building black. And died a few days later because his body couldn't handle it. And it's, you know, and I didn't think of it as alcoholism. I just thought this is another crappy deal on this crappy planet. You know what I mean? It's another raw deal one of my buddies has gotten. And here we are again. You know, and this further validates it. Right after that, my first wife's sister died. Same kind of deal going on there. And again, it was, you know, oh, no, nothing, I shouldn't look at my lifestyle. This is just what's been going on. And I just started, you know, getting more downhill pretty good there. Started running around with the guys riding motorcycles. Started doing made a little run at being a heroin addict, but didn't do very good at that. Because the guys I was getting drugs from were so dinged out all the time, they couldn't get it on a regular basis. So it saved my life, actually. I did manage to get hepatitis from it, though. That's about as far as that went. And I was just getting to where I just really didn't care. You know, work was in the way, and my parents would let me live at the house, and, you know, I was just doing that. And it was all one of my good times. I was home at my folks' house, and I was feeling pretty good, and my brother had been going out with this girl. And she had a friend, and went off wanted to go out on a date, and I said, sure, we'll go. So we went on a blind date, and that's where I met Larcine. The first time. That's been, what, 33 years now? Oh, oop, almost 35. She had to be here, right? Yeah. That's 35 years ago. And we went along and did our deal, and, you know, now just drinking, and we were having fun going out and messing around, and we got pregnant then, and but I wasn't going to, you know, I didn't want to knuckle under and do the what you're supposed to do. So I waited till after the baby was born, and then we got married. You know what I mean? I got to live that bohemian lifestyle, you know. It's just a wonderful thing. So then we got married, and our son was a couple months old, and we started our little road to happiness there. Boy, it was nuts, I tell you. She had this really weird idea that I shouldn't drink every day and I should go to work every day. And I thought, well, where is that coming from? We never talked about this before. You know, it's just very unusual. You know, once I said, she was threatening my bohemian lifestyle there. And so we had our little war started, as I like to call it. And it was around the same time that the alcohol started making me starting to get real uncomfortable behind it. It wasn't working as well as it had been. You know, I started getting really... I didn't understand why I could be with my wife and love her so much and our son and love him so much and then have to go out and drink and just wreck everything. I didn't understand what that was all about. I had no idea what was going on there. I thought, man, I'm just really getting crazy here. This is really, you know, disturbing me. And I started having blackouts, and I didn't know there were blackouts. So there, I thought one more time, well, there I am, a little crazier. I mean, who do you talk to about? Well, gee, I don't remember what happened, you know, for the last 3 or 4 days. No one that I knew. You know what I mean? If you want to stay out of the hospital. So you just kind of shovel that down in there, and it gives you more to drink about. You know, got to keep that stress level high. A wonderful disease. Anyway, that started going on, and I just was really befuddled by that. I didn't know what was up with it. And she came up with an idea of anabuse, as stuff was called. It's a pill you take, and if you drink behind it, you're not going to turn purple or something, you know, some really weird crap. But I was kind of burnt out anyway when she brought it up, so I just said, okay, I'll stop drinking and start taking that. And the problem was I had been taking Valium since I was 18, and I was like almost 30 years old now. And I stopped taking the Valium and stopped drinking at the same time and went through these amazing DTs. That I didn't even know were the DTs. That lasted about a week and a half or so of a lot of hallucinations and shadows move in with nothing in them, but lots of stuff in them. Heard dogs barking, but didn't know they were dogs. You know, a lot of interesting stuff. I was afraid of the Brady Bunch on TV. They scared me to death. I thought, man, you've gone and done it now, man. You're out of here. They're just going to wrap you up. As soon as if you say anything to anybody, you're gone. You know, you'll be in the ward, padded. And it just scared the hell out of me. And so I went to the doctor freaking out, going, ah, you know, and he gave me some tranquilizers and started me off again. But I did is I took a, I kept taking the antabuse, didn't drink for 2 years. Took an inordinate amount of drugs to take its place, but it just didn't quite get it. You know what I mean? It was close, but wasn't there. And I tried. I just got really sloppy and really, you know, stopped drinking, but it, you know, I wasn't a happy creature. You know, I wasn't on the road of happy destiny at all. Anyway, got through that, and the doctor said, you can go off the antabuse. You know, it's not meant to take forever. And so after a couple of years, I stopped taking it. And he said, you know, you can go a little while, and then you can go ahead and try some social drinking. You know, and I never heard of social drinking before, but I heard the drinking bell go off, you know. I don't know, okay, kind of calmly looked at my wife, see what she was doing, you know, see if she really heard it. And started back drinking again. And that was the start of the end of my drinking. Last 9 months, my drinking started right there. And, you know, I got the AA, they talked about how this is a progressive disease. The allergy progresses whether you drink or not. And I'll tell you, I hadn't had a drink in 2 years. And when I started back drinking, it just ran me over. That last 9 months was pretty much a pure blackout for me. I remember very, very little about what was going on. I would come to and have a drink in my hand and drink it, or come to, have no drink, and wander off from wherever I was and get a drink. And I have a wife and 2 children at home at this time, you know, and we're trying to make like a normal life's going on. And it had me. It had me. I had no more choice. There was no more, let's do a barbecue this weekend so I can drink. No, no, no. It was gone. It was just off the races. And when you're in that kind of condition, of course, you have to drive. So I got a drunk driving ticket again. Saved my life. I just remember coming out of the, this is how the recovery started for me. All I can tell you is my story. I think it's kind of odd, but then so is my life. I came out of a blackout in a police station. The last thing I remember was walking across the street somewhere, and then all of a sudden, next thing I see is I'm standing there in a police station with policemen all around me. And I heard this voice say to stop fighting. And when I heard it, I didn't take it as a policeman or anyone around me. It was just a voice that made like, how do you say it? It was like a comment or a suggestion to stop fighting. And when I heard that, I agreed inside me somewhere that I had been fighting something. And I didn't know what. I didn't know what it was about or what any of that meant at the time. But I just said, I agreed with it and blew out on the breath test thing and went back to my blackout. And that was the night of my last drink. You know, it started then. I didn't get up in the morning and say, well, shit, I'm going to AA. You know, I'm an alcoholic. No, that didn't happen. You know, my wife came, got me in the morning, and it was a real different kind of deal. Because usually, you know, when your Al-Anon is, when your pre-Al-Anon wife comes to get you and you've been arrested for drunk driving, then, you know, she's got you, boy. You're laid out on a target. And I don't blame her. But anyway, she came that morning, and she didn't say nothing. I wasn't cussing about being arrested. You know, how could they arrest a law-abiding citizen like myself? I was just having a few drinks, you know, not hurting anybody. It just was quiet. Everything was just felt different that day. Went home and sat down for a while and went upstairs and slept for a few days, came downstairs and said the masterpiece of understatement, I think I have a problem. You know, like, oh, you think so? Let me push a little. No. And she handed me a number for this hospital. I didn't know what it was about, but I knew it was someplace I had to go get some help because something had to change, and I was gone. I couldn't do anything. It ends up it's a hospital where they, it was a hospital for alcoholism. Still not thinking I was an alcoholic. I didn't care. Just put me somewhere. And let this change, please. And so I went over there, and they put me over in the psychiatric ward for a couple weeks to so I could get in touch with my feelings, whatever that was. I mean, you know, you're either happy or you're pissed, pretty basic. But they were a little more concerned than that. So I was over there for a couple weeks and, you know, wandering around. And they kind of tapered me down off everything I've been taking, you know, that kind of deal there, because they don't want you seizing up or whatever. And, you know, I remember going to occupational therapy, and when I first was there, and it was like this big pain in the butt to try and do anything constructive, you know. I never noticed that about myself. It was just like this big ordeal. And then after about a week or so there, you know, of not doing what I had been doing, things started to clear up and it was okay just to walk around and do normal things. I thought, this is kind of nice. And anyone ever been to a Friday night dance on a psych ward? You guys ever do that one? That's a trip, boy, I tell you. Because, you know, everyone's, you know, most women, you know, a lot of women in there, and they're all wandering around on Stelazine and Thorazine and spilling hot coffee on themselves, poor gals, you know. And then there's all the, you know, the intellectuals over there in the corner, you know, doing their little deal. And then there's me and another alky guy kind of, you know, doing, you know, watching what's going on. And then they say they're going to have a dance. So they herd everybody into this room and turn the lights down. And then they start some music. And then they let all the teenage kids out of a lockup. You know, and they're all wired on Ritalin running around the room. And it just was, well, I tell you, you know, I thought, oh, great, you know. This is just like that little DT experience I had. It's starting to get real close to that, you know. I said, this is what I have to look forward to. Boy, I don't know. But it changed. It passed, and everything went from there. I went over to the other side of the hospital there, and they introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. This lady came over, and we did the 20 questions together. And something about her, I just felt comfortable around her. You know, I'm not much of a people person, you know. This lady just came over and I felt comfortable around her. And so we sat there and she gave me the 20 questions and I started to make up the old BS answers, you know, like, oh, have you ever lost time from work on account of drinking? Well, not really. And then I just looked at her and she looked at me and then I started laughing. You know what I mean? And then she'd ask another question. I'd start giving her a little BS answer and she'd look at me and I'd look at her and we just start laughing about it. And that's the first time I ever talked about my drinking and the first time I ever thought there was anything funny about it. You know, and I thought, well, something neat is going on here, and I don't really know what it is. And she said she was an alcoholic, and I didn't know what that was. But they sent me over to the other side of the hospital, and they introduced me to AA. Thank God. Thank God that the program they had. And I started hearing people talk about drinking the way I drank and feeling the way I felt and doing the crap that I did. I always thought I was the only one. You know, I mean, all these other guys would go home at night, you know. I mean, you know, there's still stuff to drink. You still got some money. You know, that's kind of what would happen to me every so often. I used to try like heck to get back home to my wife, but it just didn't work that often. And when I heard that, I didn't understand it all, but I didn't really care because I felt it was something I needed to hear. That's all I can tell you. I just thought, they're talking about something here, and it sounds like the truth to me, and by God, I could use some truth about that time in my life. You know, it was a good feeling. And so they started, you know, talking about what they were doing to stay sober, you know, working the steps, you know, don't drink, work the steps, get a sponsor, go to meetings. And so I just kind of, you know, we'd have classes during the day, and they go over the steps in them, you know, out of the big book and out of the 12 and 12, they'd talk about that. You get about an hour and a half of that a couple times a day. So you get to understand what this thing's about. And they also talked about, you know, the alcoholism, the disease, you know, like the doctor's opinion in the book, and they gave you medical information. They told you everything that was going on and how spiritually sick we are. They covered our disease so you can understand what the heck is going on with you and why and how you can get out of it, you know. And I thought, well, this is really great. You know, I didn't, like, say, well, I've got it now and leave the hospital. No stretch of the imagination. I still can't do that. But what the deal was is that they weren't drinking, and I believed them because I watched them. And so I decided to just, this is what I should do. It just felt right for me, and I started, you know, doing what they're talking about, working the steps and doing all that stuff. I was enemies with God still, and I had to take a look at that when I started messing with the third step. I remember I was, after I got out of the hospital, I was home, and I used to think, well, I'll turn my will and my life over to God, the pure, you know, God as I understand him. You know, even though I didn't really have the concept, and I would kind of like feel myself like throw my will up like that, and then I felt myself like I was running, you know, like hiding from this God. And so when I saw that, I said, hey, and I just spoke to my higher power, who I'd never, you know, casually talked to before. I just said, I'm an AA, and they say the recovery here, you have to get some sort of a higher power and stay in touch with it, and that's how we stay sober here. And I need to stay sober. And it's not going to work if I'm afraid of you all the time. So could you help me not be afraid of you? You know, I didn't hear any voice or any of that stuff, but I got a good feeling that I wasn't doing anything wrong and that what I was headed for was right. And so I just started going after that, which is what we do here all the time in AA. That's the whole deal's about, getting in touch with the higher power that will solve our drinking problems and give us a way to live. And so very grateful for that. Because that's a big hurdle. I mean, it took me a long time, you know, and I still have things to sort out with my higher power, my old ideas, and you know, but that's all right. You know what I mean? There's a way to go, and nice concept, a day at a time, because I could never do that one. It was always, oh, what did I do a few days ago to make me feel bad today, or what do I have to do tomorrow that I can stress about so I can screw up today? You know, just there wasn't any. Living in the now was just like, you know, maybe when I'm passed out. But other than that, my mind was pretty speedy. So I started working steps, and it ended up the people that I was getting sober with, most of them were married, or, you know, working on relationships, and so they had a little couples group they used to go to. And so I started going to that once my wife, well, I skipped a couple of years. Well, that's okay. When my wife got into recovery, we started going to that that couples meeting. And one more time, it was, you know, we're a little scared about going. Oh, what are they going to do? Is it going to be one of these things where, you know, nitpick each other to death and rat each other out, or what's going on, you know? But what it was, but we just sat and talked about what you do with each other, you know, what drives you crazy, how someone makes the bed or doesn't make the bed, or what they do with the toothpaste tube, or, you know, all that little crap that drives you nuts in relationships, and just joke about stuff like that. And learn to love on each other. You know, I learned that I should treat my wife how I'd like to be treated. Or treat your wife or your husband, you know, like a newcomer. Why not afford them the same space or the same room to improve that you do anybody else on the planet? You know, but we always seem to be hardest at home on each other. But we worked on that, and it's nice, man. It's nice being able to talk to your wife and look her in the face and stuff. It's a good feeling. I don't have to hide out emotionally or nothing. It's pretty cool. And it's because of come to AA I learned how to do that. You know, I haven't, I've been here, been sober since I got here. I got here on July 21st, 1979. And I haven't wanted a drink or considered having a drink since then. And I've gone through a lot of different things in life. You know, my parents have both passed away since I've been sober, but I got to be there for them. I wasn't like the absent son off in the boondocks, you know, that misses the funeral and all that stuff. Got to be there for that and go through it, and go through it sober. And the support you get from people on this program when things happen bad in your life is just enough to blow your socks off. I just, you know, all these people coming to my mom's funeral, my dad's funeral, showing up, and it's just really nice. A few years back, I got, like I say, I had this hepatitis stuff when I was messing around there, and you know, I've been going through sobriety. It's been really good, and learned about myself. I'm really interested in that. You know, I don't really much mind. Well, it's come to the point now that I really just don't much mind when I get uncomfortable, because I've come to discover that there's always something better coming out the other side, whether I know what it is or not. You know, I've just talked to enough people and seen enough people stick around this program that there's always something good going to come out of whatever this chaos is, or, you know, whatever's bothering you. And that's a good thing to feel, you know, because you don't feel alone. I don't know what I was about to say, but what the heck? What's that? Oh, hepatitis. Oh, by the way, yeah. Yeah, I was almost dead 2 years ago. A little note there. I had this hepatitis C that I got back in the 70s when I had that little attempt at being a heroin addict. I didn't know. They didn't know. Anyway, I had this virus going on in me, and I figured that it, you know, because sometimes it doesn't get aggressive, sometimes it does. And mine got aggressive on me, and I woke up one morning and, you know, I was kind of looking at myself going, God, what's going on here? You know, my stomach's starting to do this and starting to get a little saggy. My muscles are, like, disappearing. You know, I'm working. We frame houses for a living, so I'm still working, trying to make that happen. But it's really weird when I eat food. It just doesn't feel right. And so I went to the doctor, and he gave me an x-ray there and an ultrasound. And it turns out I had cirrhosis of the liver from this hepatitis C. And that's why I was, you know, doing all this weird crap, and so I had to start taking this interferon stuff. And cirrhosis is backed off a whole lot. I took it for a year and went off, and then started back again. I have a year and a half I'm doing this time, and I got about another 4 or 5 months of that. And hopefully this will heal. But anyway, what I was trying to make the point of is when I first got so sick, we got cards and letters from people all around the country wishing me well and putting me on their prayer list. And, you know, God, that's something. It's really powerful. I remember I'd sit there on the couch feeling like really, really bad. And you get a letter in the mail, you know, from someone you'd met a long time ago, and they'd say, you know, we hope you're best, blah, 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 we're praying for you. And man, it just would light me up and give me some strength. It was the nicest thing. And I didn't come here to get any of that. I didn't know there was any of that going on in life. You know what I mean? I just came here to stop doing what I was doing, stop killing myself. Today I get to be a grandfather. You know, when I got sober, I got to start being a father to my sons and my daughter as best I could. You know, she was with her mom and her dad, and I started being a husband to my wife for a change. You know, I remember the first time we really talked, we had gone to that couples meeting. We were driving home from the couples meeting, and we just started talking about normal stuff. And it was the damnedest thing. You know what I mean? We just had a casual conversation. I was going, we're looking at each other, go, whoa, this is kind of nice. You know, none of this crap going on. And it's just nice. I sponsor a couple guys, and I let them do their own deal. I don't really push the guys. I help. I just try and get them. I remind them that, you know, in the middle of the night when they're by themselves, they need some sort of program that they can work, because I ain't going to be there to hold their hand all the time. So I try and get them to, you know, get some strength in their sobriety and some confidence about what's going on. They still call me anytime they want, day or night, but I try and get them to earn their own. So it's their own program. You know what I mean? If I was to disappear, they wouldn't have a hole in their program that it wouldn't work. You know what I mean? I just try and, that's the way it was presented to me, so I guess that's the way I'm supposed to present it to others. And that's just what I've learned here. Well, I'm about talked out. And anyway, my stuff's getting better, and my liver's getting better, and I gained a bunch of weight back. And I was really a trimmed guy there for a while, but what the heck? Rather be a little heavy and healthy than laying there like an Ethiopian boy. It was getting pretty freaky. It's nice I get to I work with my sons today. They took over the work when I got so sick, and it worked out really well. My older son now, he runs what's going on, runs the work, and my other son is with him, and then another guy, and I'm around and get stuff for him, and they do the framing, and he's really learning a lot about business, and we got his contractor's license, and he's doing that, you know, so maybe him and his brother will hook up when time comes and move on in their life. It's interesting how things work. Another thing I've really learned about being so sick is how important a higher power is and how loving and forgiving God is. You know, because when I first got sick, I wasn't going to very, very, very many meetings. I just kind of like laid there a lot, you know, and then I got started to get concerned about, well, if you don't go to meetings, you know, you probably go get drunk. And I thought, well, I'll talk to God about that for a while, you know, and then a few months in, it just dawned on me that that's not the kind of higher power I have. Just because I'm so sick I can't get somewhere doesn't mean I'm going to get drunk because I can't get to a meeting. If you're sick, you're sick. And if you can move, you'll go to the meeting. If you can't, you got to lay there and get well. And God's not out to get you. At least mine's not. There's no plan like that. And I don't want a God that has a plan like that. And so that was really kind of, you know, gave me a lot of consolation there. And it made God stronger in my life. A lot of reflection time laying around on this stuff. Most of it good. Most of it good. I think maybe I've talked enough tonight. It's just, I'm sure I've left out all the real important things, you know. I'll remember that when I sit down. I'll raise my hand or something. And, oh, yeah. Another. But the thing is, I came here and you guys introduced me to a higher power and steps to work in my life. And, shoot. And. And now I get to do that, you know, and it's really helped me in my life and being able to live and enjoy this planet. Because when I got sober, I had the same wife, same kids, same job, and all of a sudden I liked where I was on the planet. You know, 3 weeks earlier, or no, 5 weeks earlier, life was disgusting and I wanted out. And that's just the beginning of my lifetime in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a little prayer that I like to repeat, and it's... You know, the path, remember the path is the 12 steps, and it goes like this. I believe there is a path from where I am to wherever I need to go, that I'll be given the light to find that path, and then I'll be given the strength to follow it one day at a time. Then that I will enjoy the journey and be myself when I arrive, and for that I am grateful. Thank you very much.